Did you know that animal crackers first made a splash in 1880 in tomato soup when Good Housekeeping declared them a way for moms to get picky eaters to finish said soup? Sprinkles on ice cream and cookies, that happened after pharmacists stopped using little sugar balls to sweeten medications. They found that they then had a glut, and so they marketed the little pellets to candy makers. Graham crackers? Well, a s'more might never taste the same when you learn graham crackers were created by a pro-fiber, anti-sex crusader. We're reminded of all of this in Stella Park's new cookbook, which is a page-turner. Yes, she has more than 100 American dessert recipes, a lot of them with her own modern twists, as we'll hear, but added ingredients include the rigor of an historian and the precision of a scientist. Her new book is Brave Tart, which is also her online name, and she joins us from the studios of WUKY in Lexington, Kentucky. Stella, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What fun. You know, you're a chef, a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America, James Beard Award nominee. A lot of chefs, I mean, true chefs, really want to get to the root of a food. But what was this for you?
For me, it was a lot of that as well, wanting to uncover, you know, the true history behind a dessert item, but also to untangle some of the history from the corporate histories that we are kind of given, that we read on the back of a box. And I wanted to find out, you know, well, what's really going on there? That's the polished version we're being given. What really happened?
What really happened, right. We'll start with chocolate chip cookies. You discount the theory that Ruth Wakefield invented the Toll House cookie out of thin air. You go back to 1800 and dare your readers to try grating a block of chocolate on a 19th century rasp. Why?
Yeah. Ruth Wakefield did an incredible job of promoting chocolate chip cookies, but she undeniably did not invent them. There were advertisements for chocolate chip cookies years, decades even before her Toll House chocolate crunch cookies hit the market. We can see recipes identical to hers that call for grated chocolate. And it's my theory that people in a 19th century setting without air conditioning trying to grate 2 cups worth of chocolate for a recipe, that they got kind of fatigued by this process and decided to chop it up instead. And they created a very modern and very authentic chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, there you go. And in researching this, you scraped the skin off your hands.
Yeah, a little bit. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't jumping to any wild conclusions here. So I got on eBay and found a real old 19th century rasp that was in working condition and started grating chocolate. And it takes forever. These aren't microplanes, you know. If you're short on time in a hot kitchen, kind of stressed out about a recipe, you know, it'd be a really easy swap to think, you know, I'm just going to grab my knife.
Yeah. And just, or my axe, just whack it. Graham crackers, you start the write-up with this sentence. From the late 1820s to his death in 1851, a Connecticut man named Sylvester Graham led a wild and crazy group of pro-fiber, anti-sex crusaders known as the Grahamites. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Sylvester Graham really believed in kind of the whole food movement. He thought that grains should be consumed as they came up from the ground, which is they should be milled as briefly as possible to try and preserve all that God had packed into them. So he was big on fiber. He was very clear that he did not believe in the use of fats or sugar or spices as being part of any type of diet that he would recommend. Mm. So bakers in the 19th century, they didn't appreciate that he was, you know, looking down on their trade and looking down on cookies and baked goods and sweets. So I think they kind of named it ironically to as a little dig. Our graham crackers are, you know, highly sweetened and generally spiced with cinnamon and pretty rich as well.
Talk about the sprinkles we mentioned, or jimmies they're called in some parts of the country. Really a pharmaceutical product?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, back in the olden days, if, and, you know, we're looking at the early 1800s here, if someone had a severe injury and they needed to be prescribed some type of painkiller or relief, choices were like things like opium and morphine. And these are powerful drugs. And so for pharmacists, it wasn't really advisable for them to give their average patient a little vial of morphine or cocaine or something like that, because no one can dose out these micrograms the way that they would need to at home. So what they would do is they would take these really potent drugs and toss them with these little tiny sugar pearls. We would call them nonpareils today. Like, they look like kind of white sprinkles. And they would dilute the drug over a larger volume of the sugar and toss it and shake it around until the drug was evenly distributed. And through that dilution, they could say, okay, we'll just take a half teaspoon of of the sugar pearls. And that was the proverbial spoonful of sugar that helped the medicine go down.
Oh, wow.
Well, eventually encapsulation took over, where, you know, those little gel tablets that have the medicine tucked inside. And so as that technology became available, people didn't need to use this dilution method anymore. But there are all these manufacturers who are already set up to make this type of sugar for the pharmaceutical trade. So they kind of pivoted to start manufacturing them as a candy instead.
Yeah. To our great delight. Donuts. In the early 1900s, they were fried in goose fat or blubber raised with yeast. Talk about how that changed and the involvement of a guy named Adolf in the 1920s.
Yeah. So what's really interesting about donuts is that, you know, we've had them for a long time. In the 1920s, Adolf Levitt, who is a Jewish-Russian immigrant, he started out as a franchisee with a display donut. And he seemed to have realized that the more lucrative opportunity was for the people manufacturing the equipment and mixes that were necessary to run these donut operations. So instead of being merely a franchisee and operating this donut shop, he began manufacturing his own equipment and his own donut mix and his own donut fry oil. And so he set up it was called Mayflower Donuts, and it was kind of a precursor to all of our donut chains that we have today, like Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts and things like that.
Hmm. Look, it's a wonderful book of history, but it is also a fabulous book of baking. And there's all the Americana stuff in there. There's Pop-Tarts, homemade Reese's peanut butter cups. There's Rice Krispie treats. Give us a couple of baking tips.
One, most importantly, I would say for this book, you want to use American butter throughout. A lot of times people will spring and pay a little bit more money to buy a high-fat European-style butter.
Huh.
And for most American recipes, that's not what you need because it has a higher fat content and a lower water content. And those are two things that are going to work against a lot of the textures that we go for in American baking, like a chocolate chip cookie. We want it to be nice and chewy, and that comes from gluten development. And that gluten development requires a little bit of water and not too much fat.
Oh, no. Okay, give us some more.
Another tip would just to be aware of what temperature it is in your kitchen. Butter is the building block of every recipe, whether you're making a cake or cookies or muffins or what have you. And, you know, butter has very different consistencies at different temperatures. You know, it comes out of the fridge, it's rock hard. If it's been sitting on the counter for too long, it starts to soften up. And whatever your room temperature is, if it's above 75 degrees or if it's below, say, 65 degrees in your kitchen in the winter, everything in your kitchen, from your mixing bowl to your sugar and your flour, all those pantry staples that are sitting out, those ingredients have had time to reach that ambient temperature as well. And so they can act as a source of heat or coldness to the butter and change its consistency. So in the wintertime, you're at risk for having your doughs be too crumbly or your cake batters be too stiff, because even if you soften your butter to the exact perfect temperature for the recipe, you know, when you add it to a mixing bowl filled with cold sugar, it's going to drop that temperature and start to firm the butter back up. And conversely, in the summertime, if it's above 75 in your kitchen or if it's really warm, you can get your butter softened to just the perfect temperature where it's nice and cool and perfect for use. And you throw it in a dish of essentially warm sugar, and it's going to start melting the butter and softening it. Being a little bit aware of how kitchen temperature can impact your ingredients can go a really long way in getting more consistent results, regardless of what time of year that you're baking.
A couple other tips from Stella Parks in her Brave Tart book. Milk, when recipes call for whole milk, accept no substitutions. If a dough or a batter or a custard tastes too sweet, don't cut back on the sugar, add a little salt. Baking sheets, save your money, you say. You say in the very best restaurants, pastry chefs just use those aluminum sheet pans.
Yeah, what people don't often realize is by changing things up and using a different type of sheet pan than that, you're going to be changing your baking times. So, for example, in my book, all of the recipes are formulated and developed with an aluminum sheet pan in mind. And so if you switch to something else, like a dark nonstick material or even something like steel that's reflective but of a heavier gauge, it's going to change the bake time that's suggested in the recipe.
Well, and I, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, get through a recipe. But you remind us that there's all these other considerations. That's Stella Parks. She's trained at the Culinary Institute of America, was named one of America's best new pastry chefs by Food and Wine. Her debut cookbook / food history / tip book is called Brave Tart. Stella, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.